Welcome to Sounds of the Bazaar, live from Online Educa, Berlin 2015. It's a joy to be back here every year. We're here with our annual show for Online Educa. We're in a different place this year. Usually we've been broadcasting for the Marlene Bar. We're near the Internet Caf this time. I'm not sure about this space, but at least this year we've got the vendors near. We can drown them out, give them some entertainment, and they can't avoid us. And we're going to be coming talking to some of them soon. But we've got a great show lined up for you from sunny Berlin. It's actually not cold this year. Well, it's not sunny, but it's not cold. It's about 9 degrees. Positively tropical for Berlin. That's warmer than it is in the summer. And we've got a great show lined up for you. We've got two presenters with me today. Jenny Hughes, as always. And our guest presenter this year, Cosmo Cat, live in Berlin. But anyway, it's time to get on and let's go over to Jen Hughes, who's going to be talking to Paul Bailey, who's been working with JISC forever, it seems. Jen.
Hello, everybody. Paul, do you know the last time I saw you, the only thing I remember was that you were living on a houseboat on a canal somewhere. So can we get a bit of an update since then?
I'm back on dry land. I've been back on dry land for about 4 years. But I'm really pleased to be back here because I'm trying to remember when I was last at this conference, but it was quite a few years ago. And I think about when you started these radio broadcasts, so it's great to see that they're still going. Yes, but I'm back on dry land, I'm afraid. Yes.
So what are you doing at JISC right now? What are you doing here at OAB?
So we've been here, we came yesterday morning to run a workshop. I'd run a knowledge exchange for education technology. So we had about 40 participants come along from about 12 different countries. Oh, I can see one of them there. from 12 EU countries, and they put about 40 activities in. So we were looking for ideas and things that people were doing to try and look for opportunities to collaborate and share. That on its own was an interesting activity because we got most of the participants submitted at least one or a couple of activities, and we got a view of what were the sort of common themes and areas that people were looking for and working on across the participants from this conference at the moment.
And what were some of those themes?
So, surprisingly, we had a lot of stuff around blended learning, blended and online learning. Seemed to be the major thing that people wanted to talk about, which was a bit of a surprise to me that was one of the most popular themes that came up and topics. Things that I'm very active in at the moment is learning analytics. I found there was really only about two or three people who submitted ideas, ourselves and Surf, and somebody from Sweden who's doing some work there. But we had a very active discussion around that, and a lot of people are interested. But I think it's an area that obviously has developed quite a lot in the States, in Australia, is growing in the UK, partly due to the JISC project we're running at the moment. But also, I can see it's going to grow within the Europe with the work that Surf's doing as well.
I'm interrupting because we've only got a couple of minutes, but I really want to know what Surf is all about. It sounds like something from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., for those of you who can remember that. Oh, we've got somebody from Surf?
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Sorry, can I ask your name? Because I can't read. I haven't got my glasses on at the moment. Yeah. Christiane.
Yeah, my name
tell
is
me
Christine.
About Surf.
Yeah. Surf is the collaborative organization of Dutch universities, and they collaborate on IT innovations. So we provide a network and high-performance computing, but we also help them to innovate education and research.
Can you give some highlights of the work that you've been doing? Some of these things that you started off. Can you just give us a couple, one or two, explain in concrete terms what that means?
Well, as Paul was saying, we are working as well on learning analytics. It's a rather new theme. So there are universities that are interested in it, but there is not a large take-up on it yet. So we are helping them, especially with privacy issues, because that's a large hurdle to take to start with. So we have we do a lot of research and we make reports and handy headlines to get them along. And as well, we are working on a large blended learning program that is also very current as, right now. People are very interested in that, redesigning their curricula, and we're helping them with that. What are the best ways to get the right blend in education?
Christine, thanks very much. I think I'm running out of time here. Have I got another 2 minutes? No, I haven't. Graham's going to cut me off now.
You can take one more minute.
Can I have one more minute? Okay. I want to know what you guys do together. But kind of keep it clean.
We did have breakfast this morning, didn't we, together? We'll keep it clean. So apart from working on learning analytics stuff, we've been both been organisations, been running student innovation competitions over the last year or two. We started about 3 years ago. We're running our fourth Summer of Student Innovation for 2016. We'll be launching in March. And Christine, you run?
We just started this year, and we learn a lot from their experiences, so we don't fall into the same traps that they did. So it's very helpful, yeah.
So you're actually going to be hopefully speaking to one of the startups from our program called Potentially later on today.
Oh yes, we've got those on the list.
Yes, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
When you see them, can you come and get them to say hello? Otherwise, I won't recognize them.
Okay. Yeah, his name's Norbert. He's very, very good. But he's one of our startup projects we did this year. Yeah. I just like a quick plug. I'm about to go and chair a session. I'll read the title out.
Go for it.
Yes.
It's not strictly loud, but we let you get away with it.
It's e-learning design for change. It's in Potsdam 1. I think there's plenty of seats in there, so please do come along. It's going to be very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Christine, brilliant. Good luck with the surf.
You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar live internet radio, live from Berlin. All the sounds of Online Educa Berlin on Sounds of the Bazaar. And we've got people lining up for the programme today. They're queuing here. And we're very happy to have Cosmo Cat guesting on this year's programme. And this is her first interview with Julia Brevik. Over to you, Cosmo.
Thank you very much, Graham. It's a pleasure to be back at OEB 15. And I've got June with me. June, good to see you again. Tell us, you were at the keynote, right? And what were they talking about? What was the highlight this morning?
The highlights they were talking about, of course, opportunities with the technology, but also dangers like privacy, like how does your data, your personal data, get compromised. They talked about change and that we are living in a time where change, we will never ever again experience change as slowly as we are doing today because it will only increase the pace. So we will have a much more difference between the ones in the front and the ones in the back due to this rapid change. So it's a challenge if you're not in the front.
What did you think was the most provocative thought this morning? Something you took away and you can use it your project or continue talking about that OEB 15?
I don't think iPhone is so provocative, but there was one of the speakers who said that if a teacher lecturer can be on YouTube, he will be replaced by YouTube. So that is, I think many will find that provocative. And also another interesting thing is about how the taxi drivers didn't see Uber coming, or the music industry didn't see iTunes coming. And that is the thing about all educators in education and edtech. We really don't see the changes that are coming to education because we have done a learned helplessness for learning where you have to go to the educators to get learning, and that will change.
A lot of change happening and maybe to happen in the future. June, tell us about your latest project. What are you involved in at the moment?
I recently just published a book about learning in the digital age. So that is one of the projects I've done. We also, I'm here with a large group from my school, the Norwegian Business School, because we are doing flipped. We are flipping our large classes in strategy and finance, and also in math. And I think that is pretty awesome. We get good results from using video and online learning material.
Good luck with your project, and thank you so much for being on the show. Graham, back to you.
You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar, and this is a great show. We're not sure about this new venue we have at the very end of the Potsdam Room in Berlin, but actually I'm quite enjoying it. It's nice because we get more chance to talk to people here, and we got Peter Isaacson here, and I had a long talk with Peter yesterday because we've known each other quite a time, and he said, yeah, sure, I'll come on the programme. We just forgot one thing, which was what we're going to talk about. So I just said to Sir Peter, well, what shall we talk about? He said, the social side. And I said, yes, I'm always happy to talk about the social side. So, Peter, what do you mean by the social side?
What I mean is there is no learning in any circumstance and in any context that isn't social. Learning is a social phenomenon. We've tended not to recognize it because we've built institutions that play down the notion of relationship, social discourse, conversation, and we put an expert on one side who knows everything, who's already established what other people need to know, but what we really discover in any teaching situation, whether it's with or without technology, is that the teacher, the person who thinks they've got something to transmit to the others, is in a learning situation. And there is a relationship that is built there, which is often too formalized. But ever since, 10 years ago at Online Educa, people were starting to talk about the Web 2.0, the social web. And obviously, OEB was always about technology, but it's about what people do with technology and how the technology is used. The Web 2.0 was the social web. And what was that? That was Facebook or LinkedIn or MySpace and that sort of thing. So we had a very technological vision of social communication and the role it could play in education. And then we moved away from the idea of a teacher teaching a group of people and it's people talking to each other. But we still haven't defined 10 years on, and there's 10 years more to go before we do find something that actually works, that allows people to create and manage relationships, productive relationships, where it's not just one person teaching and other people learning, but everyone working together to produce creatively knowledge. And this is where creativity is so important. Now, technology actually enhances the ability to be creative, but it also means that you have to change the way people were working together or relating to each other. So it's a relationship problem. So I think there are three things that are evolving at the same time. There's the technology itself, which everyone is fascinated by. There's the organization, whether it's whatever the institution is. It can be a teaching institution or a company, a corporate entity. And then the third thing, and this is really the major thing, it's culture. And culture is not changed by technology. Culture develops as people start using technology. So we've got to remember that all those three things are working in parallel.
Peter, just quick. You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. If you just come out to the keynote, this is a live internet radio show from Online Educa Berlin. You can probably hear in the background people. And I'm talking to Peter Isaacson here. Peter, I totally agree with you, especially about the culture. But you're as involved as I am with various European programs and initiatives. And you know, the big theme at the moment is machine-based learning, essentially, artificial intelligence. They're saying we should be producing software which allows machines to produce automated learning pathways, precisely keeping the people and the social out of the learning. So how are we going to deal with that?
Well, I think the problem there is possibly a political one, because people are interested in developing industry, and machines are industry, and there are markets, and there's money to be made. But anybody who knows anything or even thinks about how they learned, whatever they learned and whatever they feel competent about, knows that the machine didn't teach them. The machine was a tool they had, whatever machine they were using. The machine was an appropriate tool if those who were using the machine knew how to adapt it to the kind of relationship and the kind of social situation that people are learning in. You only learn from other people, and you learn from the way other people think about what you're learning. And this happens naturally in all cases, even in a formal situation with an expert or a teacher teaching his knowledge and expertise to the others. There's all kinds of feedback going on. If we knew how to manage that feedback, and the tools we have can help us, but we have to master the tools and teach the tools.
Exactly. I mean, this is hopeful. You've got learning layers on later, which I know you've been involved in, and me. And that's hopefully what we're trying to do. But that's a very different emphasis from the machine-based learning that the European Commission and others are trying to promote at the moment.
Well, they see things in terms of the economy and the statistics that are produced by firms and innovators. I often, one of my key bugbears, I would say, is that we often talk in the same breath about creativity and innovation. I agree that creativity is the source of innovation. What I don't agree with when we start talking about these things is that people forget about creativity and they say, well, it's all about innovation. What are you going to produce? How are you going to sell it? How are you going to have an impact on the market? Learning is about people evolving, not about technology evolving. We can innovate in ourselves, and that's what creativity is about. So learning layers, which I've kind of followed since the beginning, seems to me one of the great opportunities to not only because of what it does technically, and I'm not quite sure yet, but the way it's designed and recognizes that learning takes place in a series of layers, and those layers interact with each other. This is a key concept.
Peter, I'd like to talk to you for the rest of the program about this, but they are reminding me there are other people who want to come on, and they're giving me signs. So come back to the learning layers stand later. We can talk more about this. Yes, for those of you live here, B43 is the Learning Layers project, and in around 5 minutes we'll be going to talk to people from Layers. Anyway, for now, are we going over to music or are we going to the next speaker? We are going to a musical break. You are listening to Sounds of the Bizarre.
And this is Jenny, who's back online. Sounds of the Bazaar at Edgar Online. Our program this morning is actually being gatecrashed by none other than Nick Kearney, who has been on our program every year since we started. You know, it's like part of the furniture. And guess what? Nick Kearney's here again. Who the hell invited you, Nick?
She did. Cosmo guy invited me.
Anyway, Nick is shamelessly going to do a plug for his session, his workshop this afternoon. Nick, go for it.
Well, the session is about personal learning. It's in Charlottenburg 1 at 2:15, and it's going to involve an awful lot of audience participation, so it'll get your brains working again after the lunch break. And the focus of the session, which is not a talk, I insist, it's a session, is to look at personal learning and how it interacts with formal learning in institutions, and to what extent institutions are capable of facilitating the personal learning process of their students and helping them to actually make the most of the learning that takes place in their lives rather than attempting to ignore it, which is what a lot of institutions seem to do these days. We have a very interesting case to start the conversation off, which is from the University of Cork in Ireland, which focuses on how people's learning in a digital humanities course was facilitated by digital technologies in order to make the most of the processes that were taking place between students and inside students' heads outside the classroom environment, and how that was brought in and used to, shall we say, strengthen and enrich the learning process within the course.
Nick, that was the longest brief introduction ever. On the other hand, you've got another minute, because I'm losing my voice here, which is always good on the radio. I need to cough, so you can have another 1 minute to talk about what you're doing right now, and then I can cough, and then we're going to go straight over to Layers.
Right now, I'm working on yoga in learning. I'm doing an awful lot of work in schools in the UK, helping to introduce yoga to teenagers, because the effects are amazing. Is that enough? Do you want more?
You did very well then. Thanks very much. Nick, I'm sure you're going to be back tomorrow as well. See you around.
And all kinds of strange things are happening here. It's a wild program. This program is sponsored by Learning Layers, stall B34 at the exhibition. And we are going to feature Learning Layers next in our interviews. We've got Raymond L. Frink lined up to speak to us, and Melanie Campbell from Bauerbisse in Germany, and a first on radio, Jannika Herf, all the way from Estonia, is going to interview them, and it's going to be her first ever programme. Over to you, Jannika.
Thank you, Raymond. So, Graham, oh my. Anyway, it's great to be here in Online Educa. It's my first time, but we've got here Raymond and Melanie from Learning Layers, as Graham already said. So, tell us about what is new and hot in Learning Layers.
Well, Learning Layers is a very interesting and large research project. But the interesting thing is that we don't do just research, we actually make stuff. So we make solutions for to help small medium enterprise to enhance their informal learning that happens in their companies by using some of our tools. So we're aimed at the informal part of learning and learning on the workplace. That's what we're interested in. And we are actually, we're now moving in the final year of the project, and this is the year where we can prove what we've been doing for all this time. And actually, if you go to our stand, which is number B43, then there's a whole bunch of people there that are very, very, very fired up to tell you all about our project and to even show you our tools in action.
And what's your role in Learning Layers exactly?
Well, the Learning Layers is actually a community. No, we all work together. And my role is in some of the software development and in some of the work around exploitation.
Thank you. Okay, Melanie, I know that you are more into that people part or the appliers part of Learning Layers, you know, actually there on the ground and seeing how those technologies are implemented. So What are your the most recent experiences? What have been the developments?
Yeah, while being at the application partner in the Learning Layers project for the construction sector, we went through a whole lot of capacity building in the last 2-3 years, and we are very happy that it turned out to be organizational learning in the end for the construction sector. So it's not only about implementing tools in the end, it's also about changing organizational strategies and making, actually decisions when it comes to infrastructure and also building capacity that the organization itself assimilates using the Web 2.0 strategy for their own staff and also for the learners afterwards.
Thank you. So I can see Raymond is eager to speak. So Raymond, it's up to you.
No, I just wanted to add something here to Melanie's story. So I told you that our project has made some tools. Now, I think the key part is that those tools were not just made because we wanted to make them, but we've made them in a very intensive co-design process with the actual end users. So we've started up by interviewing them and looking at what their needs were, where their pains were. And then we used whole design processes and paper prototyping and first, clickable prototypes to work together with the end users to work towards a tool that was actually theirs, that is actually the tool that they want and that they need. So one of the good things that I think we've accomplished is that with all of our application partners is that the end users feel a great sense of ownership over the tools that we've built and are actually very willing to help us improve them. And the good thing is that if you work in an agile development process, you need that because you will always give your users, you will provide them with tools that are not entirely finished and there are still bugs in them and there are problems with it. And they need to be able to trust that those issues will be dealt with quite quickly. And once you've built up that trust, then actually, if there is a bug, they will just say, oh, look, it does something strange. And then it's getting fixed. And with the next rollout, they can see it again. So the building of that trust is actually something that we've done quite successfully in the project. And I'm actually quite proud of that.
So. Okay, thank you. So as I understand, the most important point, what you have learned is that it's not only about technology, it's also a lot about people.
Well, actually, exactly the other way around. It's not just about people, it's also a little bit about technology.
Thank you. Thank you, Melanie and Raymond from Learning Layers.
You're listening to Sounds of the Bazaar. Sounds of the Bazaar live from Berlin. It's fabulous conference. It's wild here in our new slot. We've got people everywhere. We've got noise. We've got all going on. And potentially we have a brilliant show. And that's a week lead in to potentially the company. Over to Jen.
Yeah, I've just got to say this. One of my favourite songs ever, it's a bit naughty, is called All I Need Is a Young Man to Chase Away These Middle-Aged Blues. And there's a great line in it which says, forget about experience, I'd rather have potential. So tell us about potential. It's a great name, by the way.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for having us here first and foremost. So Potentially is our startup and we're based in London. And we're an online personality assessment platform that helps create synergies between academic outcomes and learning and development for students. So really what we're looking to achieve is producing high quality graduates who are prepared to succeed in the workforce and have an idea of how the world works outside of the education system.
So you're providing a service for students directly or for universities or?
In a way it's both. Usually we work with the institution as a whole and they make it available for the students. But the tool is facilitated, students can facilitate themselves or it can be used in the classroom or also in online education.
So I'm going to be one of these students, okay? I know I'm looking a bit past being a student, but you have to imagine this. Mm-hmm. I was a student once. What are you going to do for me personally?
Okay, so firstly, when you come to us, we're going to take you on a journey of self-discovery and tell you a little bit more about who you are and your strengths and weaknesses, and help you articulate that really well to other people as well. And then we're going to show you on a team level or in a group level, also to help you understand other people better. We help you prepare better for if you go out and want to find a job, we'll help you prepare for that. We'll connect you with other learners if you're doing group work or teamwork at university. I think that's what we do for the students. We'll make your learning at university a lot more personalized, so you're able to learn better. We increase your happiness with the student experience as a whole, because especially sort of around the collaborative learning element with group work, there's often quite negative experiences as well, so we make that better. But sort of at the core, at the heart of it, it's trying to make you understand yourself better, and then help you guide your learning so you really get to where you should get to, which is to unlock your potential, so you live up to who you can be.
So how does the technology, what technology do you use as part of this personalization process? Personalizing learning, I'm getting that was good.
Yep.
Where does the technology fit in? What sort of technology do you actually use? Do you have your own platform? How does that work?
At the start of our process is a very ingenious psychometric assessment that we've done. So we take you through a 10-minute process where you answer some questions, a very engaging a tool. And that sort of forms the start of what we do. And then we take that information and we make the insight that we get from the action level. So in a classroom context, for instance, for the teacher, we have a matchmaking tool that uses technology from dating applications, for instance, to help a teacher put a class of 300 students into very balanced learning teams. Or if there is a group of students, then again, we look at what are sort of the aggregates of the students here, and then we'll predict and visualize team dynamics and make everybody understand what they contribute and how they fit in and what other perspectives are coming together and what they contribute, so make that understandable. And sort of for the individual student, after they've gone through their assessment, they get an incredibly visual report which talks them through their strengths and their weaknesses and team roles and also Jungian types, so everything covered there. And then because we understand the student then a little better, we sort of give them data-driven recommendations how they can improve, tailored really very much to what are your strong areas, maybe you want to build on that, here are some stretch areas, maybe you want to compensate that, so read up on how to become a little bit more assertive or this sort of things.
Okay, I'm getting that. I've got about 30 seconds left, so I'm going to go back to Clayton because I haven't heard from him. What else is on the bucket list of things we're going to talk about? Because I can't remember. There were three things you wanted to talk about, and we've done two.
Yeah, so probably the real outtake that I'd like people to walk away from with potentially is that we help individuals understand themselves, and also the kind of the next step in psychometrics is understand how people work together within a team. So recognizing and understanding that team dynamic, how they fit, what they bring into it, and how they can work together to be more efficient and effective. So within the context of education, a big part of that is collaborative learning. So understanding yourself, understanding others, and understanding how you can work together to get the best from them. Whether that's through your own journey and personal development, or if that's actually being empowered to have the right discussions with the people in your team and who you interact with.
Clayton, that was great. We've got a project that we're working on at the moment, so I'm going to do a little puff for that. It's called Going for Gold. It's about helping young people to construct digital vocational narratives. Mm-hmm. So they're actually collecting digital artifacts together and putting them together in a package. That's about self-discovery. I'd like to come back to you on that one. So if you can leave your card, that would be great. And I'm looking around now. I think we... Do we have music, or do we have... No, it's back over to Graham.
Could I just invite everyone who's attending OEB today to go to our website, potentially.com, and complete their own free online assessment. And please feel more than free to send me your email with your thoughts, what you got out of the experience. Thanks, everyone.
OK. Clayton, thank you very much. Over to Graham.
I love a bit of self-promotion, and he came in very neatly at the end there, didn't he? You're listening to Sounds of the Bizarre, live internet radio, live from Berlin. All the best sounds of educational technology. Is it the sounds of educational technology? No, it's the sounds of people. Over to Shiro, who's talking to Volker Lichtenthaler, live.
Thanks, Graham. I'm very happy to have Volker Lichtenthaler with me today. Volker, I've heard a lot about a lot of projects, new things going on. Would you like to tell us a little bit what is the latest highlight at your department?
Yeah, well, maybe I should introduce myself first. My name is Volker Lichtenthaler. I'm working for GIZ, which is a state-owned agency organization and development corporation in Germany. So our projects are usually in developing countries, mainly in Africa, actually. And we use e-learning, new media learning, mobile learning scenarios for our projects to support projects on whatever sector it is. It could be education, could be health or regional development, climate, forestry. And so, for instance, at the moment we have projects in Indonesia. Here we support the Ministry of Forestry in the training of their employees working in the field with a more traditional e-learning scenario. And we have cooperation with the University of Namibia in Namibia, and we support them to merge distance education with new media learning. We do a lot of webinars and stuff like that. And we have another project, for instance, in Cameroon, supporting midwifery schools with tablets and applications to learn with mobile devices. And here in Bonn, we have a new project. Now, we are planning together with international partners, mainly UN partners, a MOOC, a massive open online course on the issue on the topic of quality, quality assurance, quality in digital learning. And that's also the website, qualityfordigitallearning.org. You can register there free, of course. We'll start in February. So we are quite excited about this.
Yeah, we wish you a lot of luck for the launch of that initiative. Volker, I was wondering, it's not the first time that you're at OEB. What do you think is the highlight this year? What are people talking about in the field of education? What is trendy and matters to you personally?
Well, we have been looking quite intensely this year in the area of gamification. Also partly serious games, but mainly using game design in different contexts. In this case, for our projects. And yes, gamification, I think, is an interesting topic, and that's also a trend here. And we had a workshop this year in May at in Addis Ababa at the African Union. And we invited many young people from all over Africa to come there for a hackathon on gamification. And five teams were there, and they produced apps in different areas. The title was Gamification for Social Good. So they are free and open. And one of the teams, five people from Kenya, Madagascar, and Congo, South Africa, are here today, and they present their product, their apps. It's actually on tribalism and conflict resolution, this application, here at our stand at the Online Educa Berlin. So we are basically following the trend, or setting the trend in this.
Thank you very much, Volker, for your time and for the update. And good luck with the conference. Thanks.
Thank you.
We've got some really interesting people on today, isn't it? It's great because sometimes you've got people you know and you know what they're doing. And today there's a lot of people I've never met before. And some really interesting new ideas. So thanks for that interview. And we're going back to Jen now, who's going to be talking to Philip Holloman, who's from the International University Bad Honnef, it says, in Bonn. Over to Jen.
It's just going to be one of those interviews, because he's about twice my height, that I'm going to be just waving microphone up and down. Philip, we've had 2 minutes literally to get to know each other. You're talking about the future of learning and starting to talk about Star Trek, and I was keeping up with it. Can we just go from there? What's it going to be all about?
Yeah, well, actually, future of learning is something that we've been discussing for years, but we tend to forget that this is already there. If you look back about 20 years or something like that, we have forecasts about the future in 300 years that are already there. If we look at, for example, the universal translator that we're facing in Star Trek, we already got that. Google Translate and all these other translation tools are there. If we talk about the tricorder, so analytics and stuff like that, even medical tricorders, they are already developed. We've got those things and we've got it with us. Every day we've got a supercomputer just in our pocket, and so far we don't seem to grasp the fact that we've got everything to build the future in education already. We're not waiting for a new technology really, but we can facilitate the existing technology already and build amazing solutions and amazing approaches and learning concepts.
So what are the barriers? Why are we not doing it?
I think it's always the question of people are lacking a guideline. People are thinking, how do I exactly do that? Is there a checklist or something like that? And in most cases, they're just left alone. Organizations, education organizations, just don't prepare people the way they should. They focus a lot of theories, of dogmas, of general statements and stuff like that. But there are just not enough of those good examples that are out there that are really brought down to the people. And they don't get the proper induction into what they just got to do to make this happen.
I actually work most of my time with primary teachers, okay, with the little kids. And most of what I do is about getting teachers to use technology in the classroom. It's about getting teachers to teach the kids to code. What technologies do you think they should be using? I know what they should be using, but if you were in their primary school classroom, what do you want to see happening?
Well, there's one thing to get people coding, but quite frankly, coding is just one aspect of digitalization and digital education. Enabling people to identify the resources that they need is one of those things. So digital literacy is one of the major issues that we're facing. And we're hearing a lot about data security at the keynote today. Kids just are not aware of what's happening in the background. One of the main issues is that a lot of teachers aren't and a lot of professors aren't. They don't grasp the concepts, the ideas, the technology that's behind all that. And what we should not only focus on is coding and stuff like that, but to help people understand how to use those technologies that they have effectively in the day-to-day life. So if I've got a video chat, for example, this is just not a video chat for one-to-one person. This is something that works in the classroom context as well. I mean, there's this Skype-a-ton going on right now where whole classes are communicating across boundaries and across countries and nations and continents. This is one of the things that only very few people would use here in Germany because they're afraid of what would happen, that don't know how to handle it really. We've got the question of how using open source content and data, and on the other hand how to validate what's in there, because there is just a lack of critical thinking that some students have. It's not as bad as most people actually assume, that they believe everything that is in Wikipedia. But one of the skills that we need are more meta skills, understanding how to new and to embed new technologies. And that is one of the major things that we've got to realize today and that we've got to implement into education today.
I'm going to just narrow it down. This is selfish, totally selfish, because one of the things that really excites me at the moment working with kids are haptic technologies, tangible user interfaces. Is that something you've been involved with in your Star Trek hat?
Excuse me, once again, the question.
Sorry. I was talking about haptic interfaces, tangible user interfaces, great stuff with kids. I'm really looking for somebody else who wants to talk about this.
Well, it absolutely is a fascinating issue. I mean, thinking about augmented reality, for example, or virtual reality and stuff, that's stuff like that. And the tools that we're facing today, my kids actually can't handle a traditional television. They touch the screen and try to swipe it. That's just what happens, because they're so into this intuitive usage of technology these days that old concepts of actually hacking code into a computer to make it do something sounds absurd. And I think if learning doesn't, and learning solutions don't copy those concepts and don't integrate those concepts and this ease of use into their tools, into their programs and stuff like that, they will fail. Actually, user interfaces are one of the most essential things in learning. It's hard to say that. Of course, content, didactics, and everything plays an important role, but everything that is about ease of use and how to actually interact with the media, how to interact with the systems, is a major topic that is, in most cases, not paid enough attention to. Looking at what we've got as learning management systems and looking at what we've got in school systems and school technology today.
So just summing up then, we've got the technology, but it's the new literacies, the new pedagogies, the new ways of using them that are the big issues here.
Yeah. And once we succeed in bringing this idea to the classroom and enabling, for example, students or enabling pupils to discover that they've got everything they need, it's just a short step to make them use those tools. As long as we focus on they've got to learn our learning management system to do e-learning or online learning, that's just the wrong way around. We have to understand that we're not working in customized solutions that we build because we think it's cool and clever and something and pedagogically valued. If we don't use the technologies and if we don't make it as good as all the other commercial products are already, then we will fail.
Philip, thanks very much for that. Mr. Spock, no, not Mr. Spock, Philip Holloman, thank you very much indeed. Back to Graham.
Hey,
I think this is the end of the line for us.
We've had some great stuff on today's show. And if you tuned in late today's show or you're here live in Berlin, the whole show will be available as a podcast probably this afternoon. Janneke's working as I watch on her programme notes. Dirk Stieglitz, the silent one, is one of the people who makes this show possible. He's sitting behind his deck there. Thanks to Cosmo Cat for a great guest interview. Thanks to Jen, as always. Music today has been by Gustavo Krenetschi on Yamendo.com. I'm quite liking our new spot here, but I have a story to tell you. A couple of minutes ago, I wandered across to a coffee place that's very close to here trying to get coffee. The queue was too big. I had my microphone. I've got my big yellow new press badge on. And a man comes up to me. And I thought he's going to say, I love your program. And he said, excuse me, sir, can you tell me where the restroom is? So obviously we're being recognised for our excellence in everything. That's all from today, but don't worry. And you lot on Making Science Easy, you're on the programme tomorrow. It's lovely to be here. It's lovely to have you as an audience. You've been listening to Sounds of the Bazaar live internet radio from Online Educa 15 in Berlin. Over to you, Dirk.